All right, ready to dive in. Your source material this time is all about injection molding and compression molding.
Two techniques that shape, well, pretty much everything around us, even though most people probably don't even know what they are.
I know I didn't until I started reading this stuff. Honestly, it's kind of mind-blowing when you realize just how many everyday objects rely on these methods.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking everything from, like, the sleek lines of your phone to, you know, the rugged durability of car parts. It's really fascinating how these techniques influence the whole design process.
Oh, totally. One of the sources even said you basically can't even start designing a product without knowing how it's going to be molded. Which makes sense when you think about it.
Absolutely. It's kind of like a choreographer planning a dance, right? They have to know, like, the strengths and limitations of the dancers before even designing the routine.
Okay, so let's break down the basic moves of each technique. Starting with, well, I guess injection molding. Just the name sounds kind of intimidating.
It's actually simpler than it sounds. Imagine, like, a syringe, right? Injecting a precise dose of medicine. Now just swap out the medicine for molten plastic and the needle for a carefully shaped mold. And boom, you've got the gist of injection molding.
So precision and control are, like, the key elements here.
Absolutely. With injection molding, you can create parts with incredible detail and complexity. Think about, like, the tiny gears inside a watch or the intricate connectors in a computer chip.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. All right, so what about compression molding then? How does that dance differ?
Well, compression molding is more like sculpting with clay. You take a preheated chunk of material and press it into shape using a mold.
So is it more about, like, brute strength than delicate precision?
In a way, yeah. Compression molding is great for creating, like, big, sturdy parts that need to withstand a lot of force or heat. Think about, you know, those heavy-duty components for cars or appliances.
Okay, so we have our two main dancers. Injection molding, the precision artist, and compression molding, the powerful sculptor. But how do you choose the right partner for your product then?
That's the real question, isn't it? It all boils down to understanding, you know, the unique strengths and limitations of each technique, and then matching those to your specific design needs.
So, like, a matchmaking service for products and molding methods.
Exactly. All right, so let's do a head-to-head comparison then, starting with cost. I know that's always a big factor for any project.
It's like the first question anyone asks, right? How much is this going to cost me?
Right. So injection molding, it has a higher initial setup cost because the molds themselves are really complex and precise. But the cost per unit drops significantly, especially for high-volume production.
So it's kind of like investing in a fancy coffee machine.
Yeah.
Right? Pricey up front, but way cheaper in the long run if you're, like, a serious coffee addict.
Uh-huh, exactly. Compression molding, on the other hand, has a lower initial setup cost, but the per unit cost might not be as favorable for, you know, really big production runs.
Gotcha. So classic trade-off.
Yeah.
Upfront investment versus long-term savings. Okay, so what about speed? Which technique can churn out parts faster?
Well, injection molding is definitely known for its speed. Like, it can pump out parts at a seriously impressive rate. It's perfect for mass production.
For when you need a million little widgets ASAP? What about compression molding? A bit slower on the draw, I imagine.
Yeah, it tends to have a more moderate pace, I guess you could say. It's not as fast as injection molding, but it's still efficient, you know, for many applications.
Okay, makes sense. So speed is definitely on injection molding side. What about material usage? Are there any big differences there in, like, how efficiently they use materials?
That's a good point. Injection molding can sometimes lead to a bit more waste because you have to trim off excess material from the molded parts.
Ah, kind of like when you're baking cookies, you got to cut off the uneven edges to make them all perfect.
Yeah. Uh-huh, exactly. But with compression molding, you're using a pre-measured amount of material, so there's very minimal waste.
So the eco-conscious choice, I guess. Okay, let's talk about ideal applications then.
Yeah.
You said injection molding is great for those intricate designs. Why is that?
The high pressure that's used in injection molding, it allows for super fine details and complex shapes. Like, think about the smooth curves and precise features of your smartphone case, or even the intricate mechanisms of a medical device.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that precision would be key in those cases. What about compression molding, though? What kind of products are, like, its forte?
Compression molding is really best for creating large, sturdy parts that need that, you know, real strength and durability. Think about, like, automotive parts, dashboards, bumpers, or even those rigid electrical insulators you see on power lines.
Okay, so if you need something tough and strong, compression molding is your go-to. But wait, hold on. There's one more technique in the mix, right? Our source material mentioned blow molding. Where does that fit into all of this?
Blow molding. That's the specialist for creating hollow objects. So think about all the bottles and containers you have in your pantry, or even like those giant water tanks you see on farms. It's actually a pretty fascinating process, almost like a high-tech version of glass blowing.
Okay, so we've got our three molding musketeers then.
Mm.
Injection molding for intricate details, compression molding for strength and durability, and then blow molding for all the hollow stuff. But I'm curious, how do these techniques actually influence the design process itself? I mean, you can't just design something and then be like, okay, now pick a molding method, right?
You're absolutely right. These techniques are way more than just manufacturing methods. They're like design partners. They really shape the entire design journey, like from the materials you can use to the final look and feel of your product.
Okay, so I'm intrigued. Let's unpack that a little, those design implications. Starting with materials, how do these molding methods dictate what kind of materials are even on the table?
Well, just imagine, like, materials have personalities, right? Some materials are like graceful ballet dancers, you know? They flow beautifully under pressure and are perfect for injection molding. Those are your thermoplastics, like the ones they use in water bottles or Lego bricks.
I love that analogy. So knowing your molding technique helps you choose materials that'll like cooperate during the dance.
Exactly.
What about production efficiency? How does that play into the design process?
Well, production efficiency, it's all about finding the right rhythm. Like injection molding is like a high-speed train, you know, perfect for churning out large quantities of parts super quickly. But it might not be the best choice if you're going for like a leisurely scenic route where you need more flexibility and the ability to, you know, customize each part.
So it's not just about speed, but about like matching the pace of production to your specific needs, basically. Yeah. What about the impact on the surface finish of a product? I imagine that varies quite a bit depending on the technique.
Oh, absolutely. Injection molding with its high pressure and, you know, super precisely engineered mold, it usually results in that like really sleek, smooth surface that we're all so familiar with, you know, like the flawless finish of a high-end gadget. But blow molding, it creates surfaces that are less precise, but still very functional. They often have that slightly textured look like you see in a lot of bottles and containers.
So each technique has its own signature style, basically.
Exactly.
All right, so before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to peek behind the curtain a bit and talk about the machines that make all of this possible. Our research mentioned some pretty impressive equipment. Can you give us a little glimpse into that world, the world of molding machinery?
Of course. These machines are like where the magic happens, you know? Each molding process has its own specific equipment with all these components that work together like a perfectly choreographed team.
Okay, so let's start with injection molding then. What are the key players in that mechanical ballet?
Well, the star of the show is, of course, the injection molding machine itself. It's this super sophisticated system that heats the plastic pellets, melts them into a liquid, and then injects that liquid into the mold with incredible force and precision.
Wow. So it's like a high-tech chef, you know, melting and molding with like serious expertise.
Right.
What about the mold itself then? What's that like?
The mold is a separate component, but it's, you know, just as important. It's usually made of steel or aluminum, and it contains the cavity that gives the part its final shape. It's got to be incredibly durable, of course, to withstand all that heat and pressure from the injection process. And, you know, it has to be crafted with incredible precision to ensure that every tiny detail of the design is captured perfectly.
It's wild to think about, like, this metal shell is what gives birth to so many everyday objects.
It really is.
Okay, so the injection molding machine and the mold, they work together like this well-oiled duo to create the final product. Mm. What about blow molding then? What kind of machinery is involved there?
Well, blow molding uses a different set of tools. It starts with something called an extruder, which melts the plastic and forms it into this tube-like shape. They call it a parison. Think of it like a giant Play-Doh fun factory, you know, but squeezing out plastic instead of colorful dough.
Uh-huh. I love that visual. So we have our plastic tube. What happens next?
All right. So then this parison, it's placed inside a blow mold, which is usually made of two halves that clamp together. And then air is blown into the parison, inflating it like a balloon to take the shape of the mold.
It's literally like blowing up a balloon, but with molten plastic and with a, you know, very specific shape in mind. I can already picture all kinds of crazy creations coming to life.
It's a really fascinating process to witness, and the precision with which these machines operate is just remarkable.
All right, so we've seen the inner workings of injection molding and blow molding. What about compression molding then? What are the heavy hitters on that team?
Well, compression molding relies on a powerful press. That press applies the pressure to the material, forcing it into the mold's shape. The molds themselves are often, quite large and sturdy, especially when you're working with like those really big, tough components that we talked about earlier.
And what about that preheating step we discussed? Is there a separate machine for that, or?
Yeah, you'd usually use a preheater to bring the material to the right temperature before it goes into the mold. It's kind of like preheating your oven before you bake something, right? It ensures that the material is ready to be molded perfectly.
So the press, the mold, and the preheater all working together to create those like super strong, durable parts. It's amazing to see how each component plays such a vital role.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a true testament to human ingenuity, wouldn't you say? These machines are really marvels of engineering.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on to part two of our deep dive, I want to take a moment to recap what we've uncovered so far. We've explored, the fundamental differences between injection molding, compression molding, and blow molding. And we've seen how these techniques influence everything, from material choices to production efficiency to even the final surface finish of a product. And of course, we've gotten a little glimpse into the world of molding machinery with its, intricate systems and specialized components. But there's still so much more to uncover.
Oh, there is. In part two, we're going to dive deeper into those cost considerations of these molding methods. We'll explore the factors that determine their efficiency and how those factors play out in different industries.
We'll be looking at real-world examples of how these techniques shape the products we use every single day. Get ready to see like those everyday objects in a whole new light.
It's going to be an eye-opening journey.
So grab your favorite beverage, settle in, and we'll be right back with part two of our deep dive into the world of molding. All right, welcome back to our molding odyssey. In part one, we kind of demystified those processes of injection molding, compression molding, and blow molding. Now let's get down to like the nitty-gritty, the factors that determine which process is the most cost-effective for a given product.
Yeah, cost effectiveness, it's a little bit like a puzzle, where each piece, the material, the design, the production volume, it all has to fit together perfectly to create like the ideal solution.
Okay, so let's start putting those puzzle pieces together then. I remember you mentioning that like production volume, that plays a big role in figuring out the cost effectiveness of these different molding techniques.
Absolutely. Think of it this way, right? Injection molding with that higher initial setup cost, it's kind of like buying a, really high quality printer. It might be expensive up front, but each individual print, it becomes super cheap the more you print.
So if you're like churning out millions of those tiny gadgets, injection molding makes sense. But if you're creating, a limited edition run of artisan teapots, maybe not so much.
Exactly. For smaller production runs, a process like blow molding, which has a lower initial investment, it often makes way more financial sense.
So it's all about finding that like sweet spot between the upfront investment and the per unit cost.
Right.
Okay. And then design complexity, that also seems to be a major factor in choosing the right molding technique.
Yeah.
Like intricate designs with lots of little details, they probably lean towards injection molding, right?
Yeah, you're spot on. Think about something like the casing of a high-end smartphone. All those tiny buttons, intricate curves, the precise openings for, the cameras and the speakers. To get that level of detail, you really need that precision and control that injection molding offers.
It's amazing how all those tiny little details get captured in those molds. What about simpler designs then? When does, like, compression molding take the lead?
Compression molding, it really shines when you need those large, sturdy parts that don't need like a ton of fine detail. Think about something like, an electrical insulator for a power line. It's got to be super strong and durable, but the shape itself is relatively simple.
Right, that makes sense. So the more complex the design, the more likely injection molding is going to be the winner, even if the production volume isn't that huge.
Yeah, pretty much. Design complexity is like a really powerful driver in that molding decision-making process. Now, let's add another piece to the puzzle, the choice of materials. I know that different molding techniques work better with different types of materials, but how does that choice impact, the cost effectiveness?
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. Like material cost, that's obviously a factor, but are there any like hidden costs lurking beneath the surface?
That's a great question. It's true that, some materials are simply more expensive than others, like those high-performance polymers that they use in like aerospace applications. Those can really impact the overall cost of a project. But there are also those less obvious cost considerations.
Like what?
Well, each material has its own little quirks, when it comes to the molding process. Some materials, they need to be heated to super high temperatures, or they require like longer cooling times, and those things can really affect the cycle time of the molding process, which ultimately impacts the overall efficiency and cost.
So a material that's like difficult to mold, that could actually end up being way more expensive in the long run, even if the initial price is lower.
Yeah, exactly. It's
Yeah.
all about striking that, balance between material performance, moldability, and cost.
This is starting to feel like a strategic game where every decision has a ripple effect on the cost and the efficiency.
That's a great way to think about it. It's about, understanding all the variables and making those smart choices at every stage. Now, let's shift gears a little bit, and we'll explore how these molding techniques actually play out in different industries.
Okay, let's take a whirlwind tour of the molding world then. Where should we start?
Well, injection molding is kind of like the workhorse of the manufacturing industry. It's used in a truly mind-boggling array of products across pretty much every sector you can imagine.
Give us some highlights then. What are some of the star players in the injection molding world?
Think about all the consumer electronics we use every day, right? Smartphones, laptops, headphones, gaming consoles. Injection molding is like essential for creating those sleek casings, those intricate buttons, and all those little internal components that make those devices tick.
So next time I'm like marveling at the slim design of my smartphone, I'll
Yeah.
be thinking about the power of injection molding.
Exactly. And it's not just consumer tech either. The automotive industry relies heavily on injection molding as well. Dashboards, door panels, intricate grills, the list goes on and on.
It really does feel like injection molding is everywhere. What about compression molding then? What industries are its main stage?
Compression molding, it excels in industries that need those large, strong, often simpler parts. Think about like those heavy-duty electrical components like circuit breakers or those massive insulators you see on high-voltage power lines.
Oh, and I remember from our research that compression molding is particularly good for working with thermosetting plastics, right? Why is that?
Thermosetting plastics, they have this really unique quality. They harden permanently when they're heated. Unlike thermoplastics, which can be melted and remolded, multiple times, thermosetting plastics, they lock into their shape after that initial heating.
So, like the ultimate commitment in the plastic world.
Exactly. And that makes them, ideal for applications where durability and heat resistance are like really important. Think about ovenware or car parts that need to withstand high temperatures and even some medical devices.
Got it. So if you need a material that's like tough and unwavering, thermosetting plastics and compression molding, they're the dream team. Now, what about blow molding? Where does that technique make its mark?
Blow molding is the champion of hollow objects. It's the go-to technique for creating everything from those tiny little bottles for, cosmetics to those giant water tanks you see on farms. It's a really versatile process.
And it's not just limited to like rigid containers, right? I'm thinking about those squeezable bottles, for ketchup or shampoo.
You're right. Blow molding can create both, rigid and flexible containers, making it like a key player in the packaging industry.
Wow, it's incredible to think about how all of these molding techniques are shaping the products we use every single day. They're literally all around us.
It's true. They're like the unsung heroes of our modern world. And it's not just about, everyday products either. Molding techniques are really pushing the boundaries of innovation in fields like medicine, aerospace, renewable energy.
It really is amazing to think about how these, seemingly simple processes are playing such a huge role in shaping our world and our future.
Absolutely. And speaking of the future, that's exactly where we're headed in part three of our deep dive. We'll be exploring the cutting-edge trends and technologies that are revolutionizing the molding world. Everything from the rise of, bio-based plastics to the impact of digital manufacturing.
We'll also be considering those ethical questions and some of the potential challenges that the industry is facing as it continues to evolve.
It's going to be a fascinating exploration of where molding is headed and how it's shaping the world of tomorrow.
So stay tuned for the final part of our molding adventure. Welcome back to the deep dive. We've gone deep on those molding processes, broken down the cost stuff, even peeked into the machines that make it all happen. But now let's look ahead. What's coming next for these essential techniques?
It's a pretty exciting time to be in the molding world. sustainability, material science, digital manufacturing, they're all driving a wave of innovation that's like transforming the whole industry.
Let's start with sustainability. I was reading about that big push towards bio-based plastics, you know, materials that come from like renewable sources, plants instead of petroleum-based plastics. Sounds like a big deal.
Oh, it is. Bioplastics offer a way more sustainable alternative. And the really cool thing is that a lot of them, they can actually be processed using the existing equipment, you know, injection molding and compression molding. Some adjustments might be needed, but it's not a complete overhaul or anything.
That's going to make the transition to more sustainable materials way smoother. Like just swapping out ingredients in a recipe, you don't need to buy all new cookware, right? What else is happening on that sustainability front?
Well, recycling, that's another big focus. Think about it. If we can effectively recycle plastic waste and actually incorporate it back into the molding process, we could create like a closed loop system where plastic is no longer a waste product, but a valuable resource.
That's the kind of circular economy I want to see. It's like nature's own system, right? Everything gets reused and repurposed. Okay, but let's talk about digital manufacturing for a bit. 3D printing is obviously making waves in, you know, tons of industries, but how is it impacting the molding world specifically?
Digital manufacturing is definitely changing things up in some really interesting ways, like 3D printing, that opens up possibilities for creating those really complex geometries and customized designs that would be, I don't know, difficult or even impossible to do with those traditional molding techniques.
It's like giving designers like this whole new set of tools to play with. I bet that impacts prototyping too, right? You can test out designs way more quickly and easily with 3D printing.
Absolutely. 3D printing, it allows for super rapid prototyping, so designers can like iterate and refine their designs really quickly before committing to those expensive molds for mass production.
That's got to be a game changer for like design cycles and, you know, speed to market. But I also read about computer simulation playing a big role in molding. Where does that fit into the picture?
Think of computer simulation as like a virtual test run for your design. Before you even create a physical mold, you can use software to simulate the whole molding process. You can like predict potential problems and optimize the design for efficiency and quality.
It's like having a crystal ball that can like foresee any molding mishaps before they even happen. That's pretty incredible.
It is. Computer simulation can really help reduce waste, shorten lead times, and just improve the overall quality of, you know, of those molded products.
So digital manufacturing is bringing a whole new level of like precision and efficiency to the molding process. But I'm also wondering about, you know, the human side of it all. As these technologies keep advancing, how do you see the role of like human skill and expertise evolving?
That's such an important question. While automation and those digital tools, they're definitely changing the landscape, human expertise is still absolutely essential. You know, the knowledge and experience of skilled mold makers, engineers, designers, that's invaluable.
It's got to be a partnership, right? Like humans and technology working together to get the best possible results.
Yeah, exactly. The human touch is crucial for things like troubleshooting any unexpected problems that might pop up, you know, fine-tuning designs and just making sure that the final product meets the highest quality
It's
standards.
like even though the individual musicians are super skilled, you still need that master conductor leading the orchestra, right?
Perfect analogy. Now, as we're, you know, wrapping up our look at the future of molding, I think it's important to acknowledge that, like any industry, it faces challenges.
So what are some of those key challenges then? What's top of mind for you?
Sustainability, that definitely continues to be a top priority. We've talked about the exciting developments, you know, in bioplastics and recycling, but there's still a lot of work to do to make those processes more scalable and more cost-effective.
It sounds like the industry's on the right track, but there's always like room for improvement. What else is on the horizon in terms of challenges?
Another big challenge is like the constant pressure to innovate and adapt to those, you know, changing market demands. Consumers, they're always looking for the next big thing. And that means molders really need to stay ahead of the curve in terms of materials, technologies, and design capabilities.
It's like a never-ending race to stay like the forefront of innovation.
It really is. And that requires constant investment in research and development, and also just a willingness to embrace, you know, those new ideas and ways of working.
This deep dive has been seriously eye-opening. We've explored so much, those intricate processes, the amazing materials, the cutting-edge tech that's shaping the molding world.
And we've only scratched the surface. There's so much more to discover out there, from the latest advancements in robotics and automation to, you know, the potential of artificial intelligence and molding design.
It's definitely clear that the future of molding is full of, like, tons of possibilities. As we wrap up our exploration, I want to thank you for sharing all your expertise and insights.
It's been my pleasure.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. We hope you've gained, like, a new appreciation for the world of molding and, you know, the incredible impact it has on all our lives.
Remember, molding, it's more than just shaping plastic. It's about shaping our world.
And on that note, we sign off.